I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. There was some rare good news from the Middle East last week when Israel and Palestinian Hamas leaders in Gaza reached a ceasefire. The agreement came after an intense 8 days where the two sides traded attacks with rocket fire from Gaza aimed at Israeli cities like Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and Israeli airstrikes that damaged and destroyed Palestinian homes and businesses. The ceasefire was welcomed by almost everyone involved, but there's still intense distrust and fear. Palestinians say Israel has yet to fulfill its promise to loosen painfully tight economic restrictions on Gaza, while many Israelis fear Hamas is using the ceasefire as a chance to rearm and prepare to attack again. Meanwhile, far away from this hotspot, those with connections to both sides in this conflict are hoping for a better future. That's the case here in New Hampshire, where people who've lived and worked in the region are watching the news closely and waiting for word from loved ones. Today in The Exchange, a panel of Granite Staters with ties to Israel and the Palestinians joins us. We'll get their take on the latest events and what they're hearing from friends and family. And let's hear from you, too. Do you have ties to this part of the world? What's your take on this latest outbreak of violence? What do you hear from people you know in the region? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org is the address, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have four guests with us in studio. Jeff Fladen is here, Executive Director of the Jewish Federation of New Hampshire. He's been in close contact with Israeli government groups during this conflict. And Jeff, good to meet you and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Inbar Keren. She's from northern Israel. She served in the Israeli Navy and today serves as kind of an emissary from Israel to the Jewish community here in New Hampshire. And Inbar, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Salam Odi is also here. She's a Palestinian raised in Jordan. She's lived in Manchester for about 20 years and works as a medical and legal interpreter. And Salam, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Thank you.
Also with us, Wala Meita. She's a Fulbright scholar at Southern New Hampshire University. She's a Palestinian whose family lives in East Jerusalem. And voila, it's good to meet you. And thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Well, and Salam Odi, I want to hear from you first. What are you hearing from your family in this part of the world?
What I am hearing from my family in this part of the world, it's extremely disturbing. And as a matter of fact, on Nablus checkpoint, I have two of my first cousins who have been shot in rubber bullets, and they were having a peaceful demonstration. So, you know, things are really difficult. Right now, even like I know things were happening in Gaza, but they were not just happening in Gaza. You know, we had a few people killed in Hebron, in Jerusalem, in Nablus, in Ramallah.
And your cousins are in the West Bank, we should say,
they are,
not Gaza.
They are in the West Bank.
But
yeah.
They were participating in a demonstration related to the Gaza situation?
Yes, they were.
And two cousins hit with rubber bullets and hurt.
Yes, they did.
And how are they doing now?
They are in a serious condition. They are recovering, so it's good.
What are people saying? And again, your family's in the West Bank, but what is their take, Salam, on what's happening? How are they feeling about it and so forth?
Well, you know, they're not surprised. I mean, I was born and raised as a Palestinian refugee, and I think that's extremely important to mention. So, and of course, everybody is extremely angry, but they don't expect any less from the Israeli government. This aggression, you know, we're so used to it, and they're so used to it. But they are not. They will not stop fighting for. We fight for our rights of return. We are not going to give up, you know. Having so many illegal settlements and having the settlers, for example, Friday the 16th, you know, burning over 300 olive tree from my family grove, that's absolutely insane and that's not fair. And that's how people live, you know. The economy, it's horrible. It's terrible.
In the West Bank and Gaza.
Yeah, yes.
Inbar Keren, what's been the talk among your friends and family back home? First about this conflict between Palestinians in Gaza and Israelis and now this settlement. And we should say your family's based in northern Israel.
Yes, my family is not that close to this
conflict this time. We suffer mostly in Lebanon to war. This time it's only friends that live in the south of Israel. They lived in the shelter for the past 2 weeks and not just in the operation. And they're very afraid there. And today it's the day after the operation and a lot of field were hurt with a lot of racket and they have metals stayed there. And now we need to take care of that and relieved and restart to grow from what happened and everything, because it's not that easy to everyone there. The kids are terrified.
How do you stay in touch, by the way, Inbar? What's the main source of information? Is it mainstream media? Because there's been some critique about how the American media covers this. Is it more just phone calls, Facebook?
Everything. First of all, I'm very connected to the Israeli news. I read only Israeli news and watch the Israeli TV. And I'm very connected through the Jewish Agency for Israel and through the Israeli consulate in Boston. They give us updates that are more reliable, and friends that are in the IDF force right now. My brother is in the IDF right now.
The IDF is the Israeli Defense Forces.
Yes.
So has your brother been involved in this Gaza conflict?
No, my brother is a tank commander. This conflict wasn't a ground conflict. It was mostly the Israeli Air Force. So we were prepared, and actually my unit was called to be prepared, but it wasn't necessary. We've stopped at that time.
Yeah, and we may get into this later, the idea that the ground invasion did not happen. It was mostly through the air that this conflict happened.
Yes, they tried to attack only something specific, not to bomb everything. If the attack were very, very specific, if there were a terrorist driving in a car, they tried to hit only the car and not to hurt innocent people.
And voila, as I said earlier, you're a Fulbright scholar at Southern New Hampshire University, a Palestinian from East Jerusalem. So again, not quite in the hot spot, but I wonder still what you're hearing from family and friends back home.
Well, actually, war for us is never an old event. It's an ever new traumatizing event. We have to live our lives always insecure, always, it's always horrible. We're always expecting the worst, always ready to hear the bad news. And I don't know, I mean, yes, we're definitely not really close from what's going on, but still, what happens there affects us because we are one nation and the people there are Palestinian people. And just, you know, I have a comment in what she said. That's actually what happened lately, started by the Israeli assassination of a Palestinian figure, but it did not only attack that man. I don't think you saw the many pictures of Palestinian unborn children, and they, where their backs had holes because of the Israeli weapons. Unborn children were killed by your Israeli forces.
I know that Inbar wants to jump in on that, and Jeff too. But can you just talk a little bit more about what that means to always feel under siege, even though maybe your family's house wasn't being targeted or hit in this current situation? You feel it.
We feel it. Definitely we feel it. Of course, when you have to live in your house, always, I live in East Jerusalem and our area is always threatened by house demolishing. And actually the neighborhood in which I live had many cases of house demolishing. Israelis coming into the neighborhood and demolishing the houses for no possible reason, just to steal the land. Palestinian land theft, of course, and it's never, it's never justified or never, I don't know how to say that, but yeah.
Inbar, I know you want to jump in, and Jeff Fladen, I haven't forgotten you, but Inbar, a direct critique of what the Israeli forces have done.
What I want to say is, first of all, it's very conflict, because both of the sides see the land as theirs. So, of course, we have a big conflict here.
This is what's been going on for many, many, many years.
Yeah. Of course. And that's, first of all, I want to make it clear. Second of all, I know it's filled. I saw the picture. And both of sides are being hurt. Because we have kids that been injured and we have innocent people that died. And I know that right now the Hamas idea, and this is what they're saying, not me, is to kill as much people as they can kill. And innocent people. and they came into houses and killed a whole family just 2 years ago. And even last week, terrorists came into a house and tried to kill a family, mother and four kids. And it's both sides are getting very, very, very into it, and both civilians in both sides are very affected and get hurt. And it's not just the people in Gaza Strip and not just the people in Israel.
All right, Jeff, I'd got to go to you too. And I know everybody wants to jump back in, and this is a really tough situation. So I appreciate you all being here. Jeff, to you, now you are an American, but you have been in close contact with friends and colleagues in Israel during this recent flare-up. What are you hearing from your contacts there? I know you've been in touch with the Israeli consulate daily.
Well, first, I hear that the people have lived without safety and security, and they have missiles that can come with 15 seconds warning because Gaza is so close to the south of Israel and almost no time to get to a bomb shelter. And when the missiles became too much and they didn't stop, then you see a response. I would really ask a different question, though, and not just which act of violence was worse, but why are we not at the peace table? Is there not a possibility to accept an Israeli state and a Palestinian state living side by side? And instead we have these, you know, the tit-for-tat terrorism. You know, we'd like to see a return to peace talks.
What do you think is going to make that happen? What about the United States? The United States has tried for years and years and years to make this happen.
Well, we were close to a deal in the end of the Clinton administration, and Bush tried it. Then in the Obama administration, there was a demand for a settlement freeze, and Israel gave an unprecedented freeze in settlement growth, which clearly we heard from the Palestinian side. The settlements have been a major issue there, and many people would like to see two viable states side by side, but we begin with, can we have a state and live in peace and security, and is there a place for Jews there? And Jews came from that place. We were evicted long, long ago, finally returned. We'd like to live in peace and security.
All right, more from our panel coming up, and we'll start taking your questions and comments. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be back in a minute.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more of Granite Staters' reflections on turmoil in the Middle East on the exchange on NHPR. And at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, Egypt's Emerging Democracy. NHPR brings you the news every day, all year long. News from around the world, across the country, and throughout the state. Breaking news, developing stories, weather and sports. NHPR, keeping New Hampshire connected. Support for NHPR comes from UR members. Zem from Red River Theaters in downtown Concord, offering the gift of independent film. Gift of movie passes and memberships available at the box office or at Red River, theatres.org. From Groponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Groponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at groponi.com. And UNH Manchester inviting college-bound students interested in science and technology to their Innovation Exchange December 8th. More information at manchester@unh.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Granite Staters with ties to the Middle East discuss the recent conflict between Israel and the Palestinians in Gaza. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. If you have connections to this part of the world, what are you hearing from family or friends in that region? What's their take on what's been happening? What are their hopes for the future? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have four guests this hour. Jeff Fladen, Executive Director of the Jewish Federation of New Hampshire. Inbar Keren, she's from Northern Israel. Today she serves as an emissary from Israel to the Jewish community here in New Hampshire. Salam Odi is here, a Palestinian raised in Jordan. She works in Manchester now as a medical and legal interpreter. And Wala Maita, she's a Fulbright scholar at Southern New Hampshire University. She's a Palestinian from East Jerusalem. We've been hearing their stories and getting their thoughts. And again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email that came in, all of you, from Will in Auburn. He says, how do your pro-Israeli guests respond to the impact of 45 years of Israeli military occupation in the West Bank and the continued building of illegal settlements on Palestinian lands, as well as the many documented attacks by Jewish settlers upon Palestinians, including children? Yeah. If they support human rights, how can they support a government that practices apartheid policies in the occupied Palestinian territories? Will says, I have traveled to Israel and the West Bank three times since 2009. And I think I will, since he asked the Israeli guests to respond, I'll give that to you, Inbar, but I know you want to jump into Salam. So go ahead, Inbar, you first.
Okay, well, it's a very long explanation and it's hard to put it just in a few minutes. What I wanted to say is that it's very hard for both sides to live like that. Not just the settler, but the people that live close to East Jerusalem and to Gaza Strip are fear for their life as well. Mm-hmm. It's go both-sided. And I can't say for all the people in Israel, but I want peace and I want solution. But right now, the biggest fear that I have is that if we do have two-state solution, we go to war between those two states over land. And that's very frightening for all of us. And I don't feel that this occupation right now is as horrible as it's described, because we try to be as human as possible in this situation. It's a very hard and very, very, very complicated situation. Oh, yeah. And I really believe that the Israeli Defense Force try to be as human as possible in this situation. And we need this occupation to be there. Because the truth is that Israel is being under terror attacked all the time. I don't believe all the people are terrorists, that they live there. But we've been under terror attack non-stop since the day Israel was established.
Do you feel the threat is bigger from Gaza or from the West Bank? I mean, Gaza is run by Hamas. So
it's true. It's both of them. In Gaza right now, because we can control it more than it stopped, but we just have a big exploding in a bus in Tel Aviv and a lot of people got hurt. And that's terrorists, activists that tried to attack. And in the Judea and Samaria area is also people being attacked and families being murdered. Families, 8 years old baby got murdered, and it's hard to both sided.
Well, and it breaks your heart to hear those stories. And Salam, I know you're itching to jump in.
I wanted to respond because this occupation will be over. And the day in Gaza's well will be soon. And when we talk about murdering children, Beit Salem, and I think you know who's Beit Salem. Beit Salem, it's the most respected human rights, Israeli human rights, documented that between the year 2000 and 2011, 1,092 Israelis were killed. And they report that 6,537 Palestinians were killed. And they also report that 1,471 of those people who were killed were babies or children under the age of 10 versus 125 Israeli children. So I don't know who is the attacker at this point. And that when you establish a business or a home in somebody else's home and take it, okay, they are the attackers. They are the terrorists. And what happened in Gaza was not a war. They were massacres, okay? There were over 148 children that were killed. She's talking about families being killed. Oh, seriously? There was a 14-member of a Delu family in Gaza were buried under a rubble 3 o'clock in the morning, and 11 of those were children.
How can we, and this is a big, tough question,
And I want to also respond on the two states. I don't think the two states would be a solution.
You mean an Israeli state and a Palestinian state?
Yes, I think one state would be a solution.
One state meaning what, Salam?
Meaning we all living side by side with one state, not two states.
I know Jeff wants to jump in. Here's a question, and we've gone back and forth just in the last couple of minutes on Israeli human rights violations, Palestinian human rights violations, devastating attacks. As a mother, it's hard for me to even hear about children being hurt and killed. What do you all think? You know, I'm assuming everybody in the studio wants peace. Are the leaders letting you down? Is that the problem? What about the leadership? I think I'll go to you, Wala, and then you, Jeff. Are the Israeli leaders and the Hamas leaders letting their people down if, you know, nobody wants this kind of violence?
No, I don't think the governments are doing much in that. I think the people are the ones who are doing that, because if you think of it logically, military is people, is citizens at the end of the day. And every Israeli person in the what's so called the Israeli state is obliged to serve in the military. And excuse me, I would just like to respond to what she said. Excuse me, would you like to define terror? Would you like to define terror when you Israelis sit in cinemas holding your guns? Would you please tell me who the terrorist is when the human casualty ratio is 5 Israelis to 51 Palestinians? Would you please tell me how could it be when there are over 500 checkpoints on 27,000 kilometers square Israeli checkpoints, adding to that the 500 flying checkpoints which change every monthly, on a monthly basis? What kind of terror are you talking about? I would like to tell you that Israelis, I'm not trying to here to you know, to point my finger at you and say you are the terrorist. You are, maybe you're not the terrorist, but definitely your state is a terrorist state. And we all know that oppression goes in cycles. And we understand that one day you Israelis and Jew people were the oppressed people, and now you are just turning tables and you are victimizing other people.
Let me let Jeff Layden jump in too.
One thing, because that's important.
And I want to get
me.
Some calls in too.
Just one thing. I know what you, I understand what you feel, but I can tell you that right now, for me, I was a soldier. And as a soldier, I didn't want to hurt innocent people. And I know that the Hamas saying out there, we want to hurt as much Israel and Jewish civilians. We don't care what they are. They're civilians of the Israeli state and they're Jewish. We want to kill them. And I want to believe, and this is everything I know for being a soldier, that the Israeli Defense Force not trying to hurt innocent people. I know sometimes it happened, but we're trying not to hurt them. And we're trying to hurt only people that want to attacked us and hurt us.
All you do is killing. All you do is killing.
Let me let Jeff jump in, and then we'll bring our listeners in.
Okay, first of all, on the terrorism, Israel does not celebrate when a Palestinian child or adult is killed.
Yes, they
Palestinians,
do.
I'm told in Hamas, will hand out, or in Gaza, hand out candy, name bridges and roads after what they call martyrs that have killed innocents. That's first. Second, a one-state solution. What happens to Jews and Judaism and temples in countries where there's a Muslim majority? What we see often is erasing, denying their rights of Jews, Jewish culture. Is there not in the history of where there's been Muslim rule of countries, I don't know that the Arabic term attacks on Jews because they're Jews and discrimination of Jews in society. That's a problem with the one-state solution. And as far as casualty ratios, Israel made a lot of effort to keep its civilians safe. While I'm told, you can tell me if it's true or not, that Gaza uses civilians as human shields with their missiles, and as opposed to constructing bomb shelters. So I don't know that we can just go by the numbers again. We need two states that live in peace and security side by side.
Let's see what our listeners have to say, all of you. And again, I appreciate you being here. It's real tough. Let's try to keep it respectful and let everybody have a chance to say what they need to say. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Jackie's been hanging on in Brattleboro, Vermont. Hi, Jackie. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning. My question is related to the word occupation. And historically, before the Six-Day War, the Palestinians lived in the same place, but they were parts of other countries. And it seems to me that only after the Six-Day War, those places were considered occupied. And I think about this, and both sides of this, this controversy, to me, are affected by the term occupation. That becomes the reason all of these conflicts happen, instead of a lot going deeper into the history and looking at how they can coexist. Is that the word occupation it's confusing to me, because why weren't those territories where mostly Palestinians lived and who I think from my understanding were marginalized by the Arab countries in which those lands were, why wasn't it called occupied by Jordan or Syria or Egypt before the Six-Day War? And secondly, my comment is there is no competition among oppression. Both people have been oppressed historically. So I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, and Jackie, thank you, because, you know, you all, of course, know this situation intimately, but many Americans don't understand the history of the conflict and why. Can you, Salam, I think this is for you, since, again, you're Palestinian, you were raised in Jordan. What about the word occupation? Can you clarify for Jackie what the roots of this
are? Jackie, I would like for you to read a book that was written by a historian, and he's an Israeli historian. His name is Aylan Pappy. And he wrote a book that called The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. Again, he's Jewish Israeli. The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. Also, another book you can read, it's called A History of Modern Palestine on Land Two People. And also, I would like for you to perhaps get more information regarding, you know, what's happening in Palestine through Professor Noam Chomsky. Yep. And he's he's a professor, and he does speak against Israelis' actions to Palestinians. So it does make me really happy to see lots of Israelis coming out, educated, coming out saying, this is disgusting, this is horrible. But really, when you read those books, you know, you will understand. Or you have to travel. A lot of people said, we have got to, we have to travel. And when they traveled, they did see for themselves what's truly happening. And when she talks about being occupied from other countries, well, we have over 7 million Palestinian refugees. I am one of them.
That's a lot.
7 million. And they need to go back home.
I want to ask you, I think, Wale, a point that Jeff brought up before and that Inbar has brought up before, too. And that's Hamas. Now, this is a group that I believe the United States recognizes as a terrorist group. It does have a stated goal of killing Israelis. What do you make of that, I wonder? I mean, is that part of the problem, that Hamas is running the government in Gaza and striking out against Israel with the stated goal of hurting Israel?
Well,
is Hamas the problem?
Well,
not the Palestinian people per se, but the Hamas leaders?
Definitely not. Well, I tend to... I have the impression that people do not really know who Hamas is. Hamas is a media-made terrorist group. They are not, have you seen Hamas? Have you ever talked to anyone from Hamas?
A media-made terrorist group.
Yes, exactly. They don't have to actually relate to terrorism. And I don't think... Well, Hamas, they do not have weapons, actually. Look at the Israeli military. They fund their weapons by millions and millions of dollars. An Israeli rocket hits the ground and makes a three meter hole, while a Hamas made rocket doesn't make it through even a wall. So what are we talking about here? What is Hamas? I don't really know. Hamas. Just stop this, you know.
Okay, so
Inbar, jump in and then back to our callers.
Ask who shot the missile that just destroyed houses in Ashkelon and destroyed a school, an elementary school in Ashkelon this week.
Killed thousands of Palestinians and massacred them since 1948? Who did that? We have massacres called by names. Millions of Palestinians were killed.
And we have a lot of Israeli people that are being killed just because they're Israelis. And that's a conflict.
No, they weren't. They were killed
that.
Because they stole the land.
I just want to say...
Wait, so we talked
about...
Let
me jump in here if I could. This is what the essence of this problem has been for so many years. How do you get out of this eye for eye, tit for tat, you massacred, you killed? How do you get out of that? Otherwise, this is just going to go on forever. Jeff, go ahead.
Okay, let's start with truth. First of all, millions of Palestinians were not killed, and you're a Fulbright scholar, so let's start with truth. Okay, it is true that there's been olive trees that were cut down illegally, and there should be prosecutions in the West Bank whenever there's actions, which there have been actions by, not by the government, against Palestinian people. So one, begin with truth. Two, do we agree that there can be two people sharing the land?
So, but how do you get out of it, Jeff? It's so frustrating to hear this back and forth.
There's going to be two countries between the Jordan and the Mediterranean.
Who live peacefully.
Yes, and you have to begin with that. And the leaders need to teach that and not teach some of the other things that I think are being repeated here.
And does Hamas teach that, Wala? Does Hamas teach that?
When you stop taking your weapons to cinemas, when you fear, you know, that's when we will have a peaceful state.
Let's take another caller and see what our listeners make of this. Brandon's joining us from Nottingham. Hi, Brandon. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you, Laura. I'm glad that you guys are talking about this. I want to bring something up about the American listenership because of my perspective and the people I know from this. This thing that happened over there recently is another horrible tragedy. It's just an awful thing that's happened. And I think it's another tragedy that when people in the United States hear about this kind of thing, many of them have the ability to gloss over the horror of what's happened because they can automatically side with one side or the other. And I think the truth is that a lot of that has to do with the Christian history of the country. And somehow, in the last period of time, the evangelical church has been linked with this right-wing pro-Israeli perspective at the exclusion of anything else.
So Americans tend to favor one side or the other. They don't see a clear picture. Is that what you're saying, Brandon?
Yeah, one side or the other, and specifically the evangelical church has been lumped in there on that right side, and if someone listens through that filter, they may not really grasp the horror of what's happening on the other side.
Brandon, thanks for the call. Boy, this is a big question. What do you think, Salam, American attitudes, American understandings? You've been here for a long time.
Yes, and I think the way the Western politics and the Western media, you know, the way they show, of course, they do take one side, and they always show that, you know, Israel is the victim, even though Israel is the occupier. Israel was never there before 1948. And suddenly we have Israel. So I think...
We're going to a break. Don't worry, though, Salam. I'll let you finish up after that short break. And Brandon, thank you for calling. Got an email, too, that I want to share with all of you. Stay with us.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Franklin Pierce University, a leader in adult education, offering a Bachelor of Science in Healthcare Administration. New term begins in January. Information at franklinpierce.edu. And Merrimack County Savings Bank, helping the community thrive for over 144 years with 7 full-service branches in Bogue, Kentucky, Concord, and Nashua. TheMerrimack.com. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Tomorrow, word of mouth takes a seat at the table with stories of food and family. From easy ways to add some bling to too familiar fare.
I'm going
to
give you my top 12 tips for pimping your Thanksgiving dinner.
Pimping?
Pimp the Thanksgiving.
To welcoming all takers, even vegans.
I've got a homemade seitan mock turkey roast, which, believe it or not, is really good.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of mouth makes a meal of new ideas. Tomorrow at noon on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, will the medical marijuana debate return to the Granite State? Email us your thoughts before the show at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, Granite Staters with connections to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict are with us. We have a panel of 4 people. Join our conversation. Call in 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. As we've been saying, even though there's now a ceasefire between Gaza leaders and Israeli leaders, the situation is still very tense. We want your thoughts, especially if you have connections or ties to this part of the world. What are you hearing from people in the region? What are their thoughts on what's happened and what might be a way out? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the exchange page at nhpr.org. And Salam Oda, just before the break, you were starting to respond to Brandon's call asking about American views and how Americans sometimes have a skewed perception of what's going on over there.
Yes, and that's only because of the media. And, you know, the media, of course, it's been controlled by some lobbyists and they're all, you know, Zionists. So if it's been controlled by the Zionists, oh, well, the Zionists want to do, it's exactly what Hitler had done. You know, he did some ethnic cleansing, and that's exactly what they're doing.
That's not true. I'm sorry.
I think, excuse me, I have
I'll
to
let
finish,
her finish
my,
and I'll let you jump in, and then I have another question. Yeah.
Exactly. And then I also want to mention that Hamas is, they do, I don't like the word Hamas. I don't like Haniyeh. I don't like Abbas. I don't like any of those leaders, okay? What I'm fighting for the people freedom and the people welfare, like getting clean water, which is what the Israelis do. They take the clean water and they bump it into the swimming pools, and the children go without the clean water. So when they talk about Hamas, I think everybody has the right to defend themselves, and we have the right to defend ourselves. But the media make it look like the Israelis and the Palestinians have equal weapon, and they don't. We don't have the F-16. We don't have jet fighters. I think we need to have jet fighters and F-16s. So when they talk about a conflict and a war, then it's true.
Go ahead, Inbar, and then I want to pull back and ask you guys another question. But go ahead, Inbar, because I know you want to respond directly.
I'm 100% positive that Israel is not trying to do ethnic clearance. Because if we want, we didn't do the ceasefire. We want to stop the fire. We want to go to peace. And this is why we're talking about peace and defending. And we should talk about talking and talk about agreeing and not just about fighting. So if I don't want to say it like that, but if both sides will have weapons and jets and fire and everything, we will be in constant war. And that's not a good solution for both sides. So we should talk about peace and not about war. And I really believe we're not trying to do that, because otherwise we won't stop. And we did stop. And we stop every time because we want to believe in peace. We stopped 4 years ago. We stopped 6 years ago.
Stopping from a ground invasion, you mean?
From ground invasion.
Stopping short of a ground invasion.
Stop the fire and stop the attack. As what happened 4 years ago in Gaza Strip stopped. And what happened in Lebanon too stopped. Because we want to believe in peace. And we want to believe in talking and not in fighting.
Let me jump in here. Here's an email from Dave. He asks a great question. It is apparent, Dave says, that there is no hope for peace in the Middle East. It doesn't seem like there is any common ground to start a discussion. What do you think, Jeff Layden? Is there any common ground to start a discussion?
Well, I'll begin by saying I didn't think we'd see East Germany and West Germany one in my lifetime, or the Soviet Union break apart without massive war, and we've seen those things. So it's hard to stay optimistic, and I'm an American, but I have relatives in Israel, and I know many people here in New Hampshire with family in Israel. So we'd like to see that there's peace. It's difficult with what I'm hearing today, because the representatives here, I don't believe, think that Israel should exist as a state, and when you have that, it's much harder. But there are Palestinians that do believe that a two-state solution is appropriate and just and will lead to economic development and well-being for the people. And that could happen one day, so I stay optimistic, although it may take a while.
Well, what do you think? Should Israel exist as a state? Is that a common ground for you?
Well, actually, I would like to say something before. She was talking about peace. Well, I would like to ask you, how do you expect peace to happen if you still insist to go to the army? How do you think of peace if you still insist on carrying your weapons all over? How do you think of peace if you're still stealing our lands? We will always defend ourselves as a nation. We will always be there. And Palestine is Palestine, no matter what you think.
Is there room for a two-state solution? Is there room for peace? Our emailer, Dave, says he doesn't think there's any common ground to start. Jeff says he hopes common ground can exist with the recognition by both sides that there are two nations. What do you think?
If I now come up and slap you on the face, would you like to still stay here?
No.
Okay, that's it. They came, they slapped us on the face, they stole our lands, and they kicked us out, and they're asking us for peace? Come on, what peace are you talking about? Define peace, please. You want to have a two-state solution on our land? on our land. Go back to your countries. Go back to Europe. Go back to Russia, to Germany, to wherever you came from.
To the U.S.
The Israelis feel slapped, too, to use your analogy.
We did not slap them. You know, we did not slap them. Europe slapped them. Their people slapped them. Not Arabs, not Palestinians.
Actually, I want to say we were very kind to them. We did help them out. My grandfather tells me in the 40s, after what Hitler had done to them, they were very nice. They were living, you know, side by side. There was no issues, no problems. We were colonized by the British. And then that horrible Golda Meir, you know, had in her head that she wanted to have a Jewish state. I mean, this is a civilized world, and I cannot believe in a civilized world you would want to have a Jewish state. Why can't Jewish be all over the place and proud of themselves as Moroccan Jewish or Iranian Jewish or Russian Jewish? Why? Why not?
Why can't the Palestinian? Why can't the Palestinian? Because you talk about the land, the Judaism believed by the Bible that Israel is the Holy Land, and it was belonged to Jewish way before
that's
48
the,
and way
their,
before
that's their
the
problem.
Count.
And they have Jewish.
No, but I'm saying, all
of you, hold on.
You.
If five people are talking at once, it's not going to work for the listeners.
Exactly.
Inbar was talking. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that we, as Jewish, believe Israel is ours, and you disagree. That's okay. It's your right to disagree. But my question is, if you deserve a country, why shouldn't I deserve a country?
I did not say
You say you want us to be Moroccan Jews. It's
yes.
not Morocco is not Jewish country. So it's, we should be not a Jewish country. Why don't I deserve a Jewish country?
You don't deserve a Jewish country over when you demolish villages and take the entire country. You took the whole thing.
Salam,
you did
what
not
about
leave
both?
Nothing for
what
us.
About both? Jeff said earlier, perhaps the path to peace is a two-state solution,
have,
living side
I
by
have,
side. How do you feel
I,
about
I
that? And then let's go back to our callers.
I have met with Iyad Burnett, and he's from Belin. And they've been doing peaceful demonstration in the village of Belin. I'm sure you heard of it for over 8 years. And despite everything, what they did, they took 60% of their land, and then they win a court decision of getting 40% of their land back. But they in Belin, they have Jewish and Christians and Muslims all living together. And he said, if we can do it in Belin, we can do it all over Palestine.
Let's take another call, all of you. Ron's calling from Conway. Hi, Ron, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Please, first I want to say to the group, please forgive me for anything I say that may sound naive, because I certainly have not experienced what the people on the call, in the panel have experienced. So I want to start that way. Years ago, I met a very beautiful man, and he explained to me what Islam was, because I did not know. And I asked him, and he said to me, he explained the Quran, and then he said, I am one-third Jew, one-third Christian, and one-third Muslim.
Yeah.
And I thought that was beautiful. So after that, for me, I read the Torah, I read the Bible, and I read the Quran, actually a couple of times. And the one thing that really I embraced for myself in my heart is the commonality between the three. And I try to live that way. And again, to the people I'm talking to, I apologize, because that's easy for me to live that way because I live in New Hampshire. But my question was, is there a possibility for a spiritual or religious working of the problem on the ground among the people that would unite people on the spiritual or religious level that might begin to solve this problem? Or maybe that's already begun in areas and it's working. And
Ron,
I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, and it's a great question, Ron. Thank you so much. Salam, I think I want to go to you on this one because you used to work on an interfaith committee in Manchester, you know, getting people of the three different faiths or many other faiths to talk to each other. What about that?
Yes, I did. I was a co-founder of a group called Women of Faith, and we were Christians and Jewish and Muslims. And it did fall apart because at least a couple of women there, they did reveal that they were Zionist. And I just could not be there anymore after 9 years of being doing all kind of programs to educate people. But, to answer his question, I think...
Is there a faith-based solution? Yeah.
We could have it. It's possible. It is possible. I mean, really, when I met with Iyad, and he's right, he's in the U.S. right now, you know, showing his film, the Five Broken Cameras. He said, we do. He said, we have so many Israeli peace activists, and they also get shot at, and they get arrested just like the rest of us. We have so many, a lot of Israelis, a lot of Jewish people were demonstrating also downtown Tel Aviv and all over the place, regarding what the government was, you know, doing to Gaza. They were, so I think people to people, you know, if we keep the army away from it, you know, and the leaders and whomever, I think people want to have peace, and they people want to be able to get married and go to school and have kids and be
just
happy.
Have a regular life.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, take, you know, the apartheid wall, just knock it down, knock it off, and let people live.
Let's take one more call if we could. And this is Jason in Stratham. Hi, Jason, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Again, I want to repeat a little bit of what the previous caller said. You know, I'm coming at this from a naive point of view. I haven't lived the lives of the other people or going through the experiences of what they're going through over there. I have friends. I have one friend who is from Israel. I have another friend who has family in Palestinian region. But I think it's important to bring the other side of what the last caller just said very quickly, which is that as an American, as a citizen of the world, and listening to the arguing that's been going on this morning, I think they need to be careful, both sides, because we're getting really tired of having this spiraling argument go around and around. And I'm getting a little sick and tired when this country has a lot of things going on. I know the interest that we have overseas there, but a lot of the overall Middle East conflict stems from this argument that can't seem to be settled. And I don't want to say a pox on both your houses, but I think they need to be made aware of, on both sides, the frustration that some Americans and the rest of the world feels at their inability I don't want to say act like grown-ups, but...
So American patience is wearing thin, Jason.
Well, I'll only speak for me. My patience is wearing thin, and I wasn't really passionate about this issue on either side, but when I see the level of dialogue this morning and the arguing, and like you said, the tit-for-tat going on, I'm getting really tired of American resources going to a schoolyard fight that neither party is interesting in settling. And maybe everyone just needs to pull back and let them have at it and let it find its own solution, as terrible as that will be. But just a note of caution to both sides, that there's a lot of people listening out there who naively, you know, have not been through the experiences that you have been, but are just getting really tired of this cyclical argument.
Jason, thanks a lot for calling in. Wallet, what do you think? Can you pull back and just figure it out? As he said, Americans and perhaps other parts of the world are getting tired of the bickering, the tit-for-tat, the seemingly endless, you started it, no, you started it, no, you started it.
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't think the United States is tired of that. The United States, I think, is happy for that. Because if the United States was tired for that, it would stop its weapon, you know, selling its weapon to Israel. On the way back from school, every time a weapon would fall on me personally, yeah, I would pick the weapon, you know, the bomb, and see where is it made. It's made in the United States. So if the United States is basically tired of the wars, just stop transforming nations or metamorphosing nations into weapon markets. This is one. And if the United States is tired too of that, why does the United States actually promote one nation over the other? If the United States tired of that, should shoot the two faces of the coin. So I don't think the United States is tired of anything. The United States is igniting, is putting fire to the, on the conflict.
You're saying by supporting Israel, is that what you're saying, Wala?
Yeah,
yeah.
Definitely.
And Jeff, we haven't heard from you in a little while. What do you think? I want to try and get to all of you before we close out. Go ahead, Jeff.
I think violence to solve problems is unfortunate wherever it happens, however it happens. We look at Syria now, there's a lot of violence. We've had a lot of other countries near Israel. It's a very tough neighborhood. I heard a saying, it's kind of simple though, and it that says this, if the Arabs and the Palestinians around Israel dropped all their weapons, not much changes. If Israel gets rid of all their weapons, what happens is there's no Israel. That's not okay. You know, we're sorry if people are tired of it, but we have to get away from violence and meaning we have to change some attitudes to allow that to happen.
Okay, and Salam, what do you think, real quick?
What I think we need, the U.S. should stop cutting aid to the Israeli military. They give them $3 billion worth of military aid. And I also want to add, when my aunt was shot to death by two snipers, yes, the bullets were made in the USA. And thank you.
Inbar.
I just wanted to say that I really want to believe in peace. And I know the U.S. is tired. We're tired. We live like that. And I'm only 23 and I live like that all my life. But we need to talk. And right now, we can talk. Because no one is willing to listen. All of us need to talk and to listen to make it over.
Well, and just on a personal note, you know, I know this has been a very difficult conversation. Just the fact that we got two Palestinians, two Jewish people in the studio with very strong views to at least talk to each other in this studio is perhaps in its own small way hopeful. So I really just want to say a big thank you to everybody for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.